Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces say they've agreed to a US-led proposal for a humanitarian ceasefire, raising hopes of new peace talks after years of war. But previous truces have all collapsed, and fighting between the RSF and Sudan's army continues to devastate the country, with explosions heard near the capital Khartoum over the weekend. The UN Human Rights Council will hold an emergency meeting later this week to discuss mounting reports of atrocities and famine in El Fasher, in the Darfur region in the west of the country. Dalia Abdul-Monem is a Sudanese journalist and political analyst who fled the country when the war began. Dalia, welcome to Radio National Breakfast.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
How promising is this agreement by the RSF to the US-led ceasefire proposal?
I don't hold my breath when something will happen, because the RSF has a history of saying a lot of things, but then doing, you know, worse. I mean, the fighting, like you mentioned, it's continuing. They've been launching missiles into the Baba Nusa city, which is in towards the south of Sudan, and reports of people still trying to, you know, flee displacement. And, you know, satellite imagery is showing that, you know, people are not allowed to leave El Fasher. If you do try to leave, you're either told to pay a huge amount of money as safety for you to, in order to leave, or you've been attacked. So the RSF can say a lot of things, but in reality, on the ground, it's a completely different picture. And same goes for SAF. They said they agree, but they have conditions. And if these conditions are not met, they will not abide by this ceasefire, this truce. So neither side has shown any inclination nor any will to actually allow for humanitarian aid or for safe passage for civilians.
How concerning is the humanitarian situation, Dalia, especially in El Fasher? We've seen some horrendous imagery from satellites showing what's happening and some accounts from the ground, but the full scale is yet to be fully revealed.
I don't think we will get a full scale of what has actually happened. There's a communication blackout in El Fasher, so information is very patchy. And when we do get from eyewitness reports, you know, testimonies, it's like you said, beyond horrific. It's just a nightmare. You're talking about families, you know, a lot of children arriving without their families. Their parents have been killed or kidnapped or beaten or they've been separated. And so I think it's a horror, and with the aid cuts, you know, and also with the besiegement of El Fasher, aid is not being allowed to get through to the people. At one point in time, the civilians inside El Fasher were living on animal feed. That ran out even before the fall of El Fasher. So you can imagine, like, there was one report by MSF that all the, like, around, I think 50 children arrived in a town called El Tawila, and all 50 were malnourished. You can just imagine how bad, you know, the situation is humanitarian wise, simply because El Fasher has been under besiegement for nearly 2 years. Nothing was going in. And so they were just, you know, living on what they had. And that was, it ran out towards the end.
And this is not just about this current conflict as well, is it, Dalia? This is the parents of the young children who are suffering now themselves were dealing with conflict more than two decades ago.
I mean, this is the horrible cycle that the region of Darfur never seems to catch a break or be able to get out of. Like you just said, they had a genocide 20 years ago, and the very people who are now displaced were originally displaced from the first conflict. So most of them were living in displacement camps. And so they're now facing another, you know, horror story. And now it's their kids. It's generational. And it's just, the impact is incredible, because they're civilians end of the day. They're pastoral, they're nomads. They don't have any political affiliation. Yet they're the ones who are caught up in this war between two armies who are hell-bent on destroying each other, destroying the country and killing the people, you know, as collateral damage.
Last time there was some aid gathering in Abashe on the Chadian side of the border. Is there any likelihood that aid groups will be able to access from that side this time, or because of the siege in El Fasher, will that not help much?
Well, the opening from the Chad border, Adre, has always been, it's been open for more than a year now. However, nothing is being allowed into Al Fasher. And I've seen posts from UN organizations and other aid organizations basically pleading for them to be allowed through and to allow for the safety of their, you know, of their workers, their aid workers, and for the convoys to be allowed in. But that's not happening. I think what's happening right now in Al Fasher, the RSF is going through a cleansing campaign, if you want to call it that, of getting rid of anyone they deem as being pro-army or being of a different tribe. End of the day, there's also a lot of tribal tension and this an ethnic cleansing and, you know, so an ethnic targeting. And this has come to the forefront now with the RSF, especially their soldiers who are more than happy to film themselves, upload their videos on social media and boast about how many people they've killed and who else they will plan on they plan on killing. So it's a never-ending nightmare. And unless more pressure is brought onto both sides by their backers, this war will just continue, and the horrific news will continue to come out, and it will just nothing can be done. This sense of helplessness is just overwhelming because it's in the hands of a select few, and they don't seem to want. There's no political will or desire to somehow lean into those two armies and tell them, "Let aid through, provide safe passage for civilians, and let's talk."
Dahlia, thank you very much for that update. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Dahlia Abdul-Monem is a Sudanese journalist and political analyst.